I must say, it seems like more than 20 years to me.
This is BBC One. We've interrupted our programmes for a news report. We now go over to Martin Lewis in the news studio.
We interrupt this film to tell you we are getting reports that Diana, Princess of Wales, has been badly injured in a car crash in France.
Princess Diana is seriously injured and two other people have died following a car crash in Paris.
We are getting one report from a news agency that the princess is suffering from concussion, a broken arm, and a cut to one of her thighs.
The accident is believed to have happened as the car they were travelling in was going through a tunnel on a road alongside the River Seine. French officials say the couple were being chased by paparazzi.
There are reports that she's in a reanimation area of the hospital, which suggests that maybe she is in a slightly more serious condition than we had thought before.
With confirmation from Buckingham Palace tonight that the world has lost Princess Diana at age 36, dead in a car crash in Paris, along with her companion of the past several weeks, Dodi El-Fayed.
Diana, Princess of Wales, has died after a car crash in Paris.
Confirmation from our very own Foreign Secretary, Robin Cook, who's in the Far East at the moment, that Diana, Princess of Wales, has in fact been killed in that car accident.
This, unfortunately, is the news you're waking up to this morning. Diana, Princess of Wales, is dead.
In a statement, Buckingham Palace said, "The Queen and the Prince of Wales are deeply shocked and distressed by this terrible news."
At the moment, the investigation has only just begun, and few have yet grasped the full impact of this tragedy.
Britain lost a princess today, a young woman described by all to whom she reached out as irreplaceable. An early morning car crash in a Paris underpass ended a life with more than its share of pain and courage, warmth and compassion.
I must say, it seems like more than 20 years to me, and it was almost impossible to grasp it. I think anyone who's old enough will clearly remember exactly where they were when they heard those news bulletins or when they were told about the death of Princess Diana. And to me, it does seem like more than 20 years. Let me speak to Dr. Eamon Phoenix, a historian. Eamon, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Eamon, an amazing woman, no doubt about that. Arguably the most famous woman on earth at the time she died in that accident. You clearly remember it. And if we listen to those news feeds again, practically every newsreader was fighting back shock while they were announcing it.
Well, absolutely. It's one of those occasions like the, for example, if people are old enough to remember it, the assassination of John F. Kennedy that you can't remember. I remember being told that as a child in the watches of the night. And I remember actually returning from a function on this day 20 years ago, late in the on the Saturday evening, Sunday morning, putting on the television and getting the first signs that something was wrong. You saw the grainy images of the underpass on the banks of the Seine. You know, we learnt about the car crash, the three people in the car, that Diana was seriously ill, they were waiting on news. The word paparazzi was mentioned, that some photographers had followed her and Dodi and their driver, Henri Paul, in the car from the Hotel Ritz in Paris, which the Al-Fayed family owned. She was, at the time, she was dating Dodi Al-Fayed. And then suddenly, about 2 hours later, the confirmation at 4 a.m., that Diana was dead. And it was absolutely amazing because people had followed, you know, every nuance, you know, every phase of her public life from her marriage to, indeed, even before her marriage to Prince Charles in 1981, that great celebrity society wedding televised across the world. While, obviously, violence raged here. Remember that kind of strange day in the hunger strike year of 1981 in Northern Ireland. And then, of course, you had that famous interview when the sort of blushing young Princess Diana and Charles were showing their rings, their engagement rings, and she was asked if she loved him, and she said, oh yes, she absolutely loved him. And he replied, well yes, love, whatever that is. And you saw her jaw drop and the disappointment. And she said afterwards she was traumatized by his response. And of course they had only met 13 times before their marriage we think about Diana's background, you know, she was born into a sort of aristocracy near Sandringham. Her father was Edward John Spencer, later Earl Spencer, so she got the courtesy title of Lady Diana. Her mother, Frances Burke Roach, with a kind of Anglo-Irish background. The parents divorced early on, and unusually, Earl Spencer got custody of his children, educated privately, and then in Switzerland at finishing school. And she was noted growing up for her shyness as a child. She played with the young princes Andrew and Edward, but didn't know the 13 years older figure of Prince Charles at that stage. And then she returned to London to work in a kind of an aristocratic nursery as a nursery assistant. And that's when she was kind of sort of matched with Prince Charles. Obviously, they were looking for a suitable wife who would bear children and heirs to the throne. He was the heir to the throne, of course. And eventually you had the whirlwind romance, as it seemed, watching television at the time. And then that fantastic wedding, which, you know, those of us around all watched on television. The wedding of the century, because no wedding had been televised on coloured TV before. The two children born, and then, of course, reports of problems in the marriage. Eventually, John Major, oddly enough, in 1992, announcing in Parliament their public separation, which eventually became a divorce, and the Queen herself speaking in her Christmas message about her annus horribilis, the horrible year, you know, when the royals had to come to terms with the kind of problems that were afflicting the rest of society, the breakdown of marriage and so on. So we had all of that, and then, of course, afterwards, it was really after that, that she became such a human figure with all the strengths and foibles that any of us have, really. On the one hand, you know, we learned about her depression. There were reports of bulimia, which she eventually acknowledged publicly. There were sort of spin doctors, perhaps on behalf of some members of the royal family, putting out that she was mentally ill, that she had a personality disorder, which is why the marriage had broken down. And then, really, she became a fashion icon, you know, in the 1990s, you know. Her sharp suits, her short skirts, her elegance, and her public speeches, which she was using her profile as a member of the royal family, perhaps at arm's length from the mainstream, to help those who were excluded from society. For example, she took up the case of those with the newly discovered disease of HIV/AIDS. She highlighted the danger of landmines in the world to civilians in war-torn Angola. She actually met victims of leprosy who were shunned, you know, by governments and society in the third world. She highlighted their needs. And she would show this compassion in a few shy, sort of restrained words on public occasions. And then, of course, she began to speak publicly about the breakdown of her marriage, the fact that there were three in this marriage, a reference to the emerging figure of Camilla Parker Bowles, the present Duchess of Cornwall. And people began to sympathise with her, empathise with her, because she kind of reflected them. Her love affairs, the final one, of course, with Dodi, with whom she died in the car in Paris, all of that there. But she worked with charities to help the homeless, all of those charities. I think Prince Harry has continued her work with AIDS victims today. And then suddenly, to bring us to that night, you know, in August 1997, and the shock of her death, because, of course, you almost saw her death in slow motion. If you remember, Frank, and people will remember this, she was captured in CCTV footage in the hotel Ritz in Paris, in the lift, laughing, smiling on her way out the back entrance to avoid the ever-present paparazzi. And then, of course, within minutes, death in the underpass. Again, it came in slow motion to us. And then the big thing was, of course, how would the royal family, who were very much distant from her for the previous 5 or 6 years, how would they react to this? And, of course, I think public reaction was absolutely an outpouring of grief. People not sure how to express it. Coming to Kensington Palace with their wreaths, with their flowers, people weeping. They said something like 6,000 people were coming in to London every 15 minutes. as her coffin was returned to Britain. But the royal family, of course, were on holiday in Balmoral, and they didn't stir. They showed no sign of coming down to London to catch the public mood. And, of course, they were virtually forced into it. I mean, this was an occasion where actually the royal family were actually grabbed by the scruff of the neck and brought to meet, you know, their subjects who were in mourning and displeased at the slow reaction of the Queen, obviously guided by her advisers at this stage, and so on. And the Queen's speech on the occasion when she talked about, you know, that Diana was much loved, that she would never be forgotten, and there were things to learn from her life, and that she was very much in mourning for Diana. And that kind of stabilised the public mood. You had the vast funeral watched by 2.5 million people on the streets, on television, her burial on that island. And people will remember the funeral service. I mean, I certainly do. You had the splendid rendition of Candle in the Wind, you know, by Elton John, who was a personal friend, like so many of celebrities and musicians who were very friendly with Diana. Actresses, for example, you have a tribute today from Jamie Lee Curtis. And then, of course, you had the very, very emotional speech by Earl Spencer, her brother, you know, who said what he wanted to say, didn't consult anyone, and was very hard on the kind of tabloid press and the paparazzi on that occasion. And then, of course, she's become a legend afterwards. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And yet we know she had problems. She had obviously illnesses. She had depression. She had all of that. Yet she did all these things in the public sphere. And the other thing we haven't mentioned is, of course, she was a devoted mother to her young children, skiing with them in Switzerland, you know, going to fun fairs in Britain with her children. That sort of uproarious, hearty laugh that was very natural, you know, that everyone remembered. I mean, she was celebrated by Bill Clinton, was in tears, Helmut Kohl. Across the island of Ireland, people were in mourning. I remember that day actually travelling through West Belfast and the streets were deserted, and you just knew that this was the focus of everyone's attention, regardless of politics or identity.
Yeah, people were certainly interested in her. There's no question about that, Eamon, an understatement if there ever was one. You touched on everything, but two points spring to mind. One, first of all, about her personality. And you said she was with Dodi Al-Fayed, the man she was in love with when she died. She had a number of men post-Prince Charles, maybe even while she was with Prince Charles. Do you think she was always searching for love, or did she dangle men on a string?
No, I think she was searching for the real McCoy, as we would say here. I mean, I think that she was searching for a meaning to her life. I mean, we know that she knew Mother Teresa. She was friendly with the Archbishop of Canterbury. She was, you know, Songs of Praise this weekend have celebrated the fact that, you know, those who knew her felt that she had a fairly deep religious faith, despite her personal life and her personal difficulties. And she was trying to find, I think, that in people. It's very hard in the public eye, I think we have to imagine, you know, to conduct a normal courtship with, you know, the scent of the press, the long-range camera, all of that kind of... It must have been very difficult. Also bringing up her children and trying to give them that motherly love when everyone knew that her marriage had fallen apart and that her former husband, obviously, was, you know... had a relationship with another woman. There was all of that there. But I think this is part of the tragedy of Diana. When we think of the fact that, you know, she was only 36 when she died. I mean, 36, you know, most people at 36 nowadays are kind of recently married. They might have one or two children in that context. But 36, she was on the cusp of life, you know. And indeed, I saw in the Sunday papers at the weekend people conjecturing a different ending to her life. What if the car crash hadn't happened? Where would she be today in the age of the internet, at the age of globalization on a massive scale, the tensions in the world of Trump and Brexit? Where would she be today? I think, you know, that's something that tantalizes as well, Frank.
Absolutely. And finally, Eamon, the conspiracy theories. You're a historian. You can only base everything you say on fact. Is there a possibility that some dark hand somewhere intervened to ensure that that incident happened in the underpass?
Well, well, there are so many conspiracy theories about some of the deaths of so many public figures. And, I mean, this certainly was shared by the Al-Fayed family. Muhammad Al-Fayed clashed with the royal family. The idea that they, you know, that the royal family or advisors or governmental forces operated a dark hand to assassinate Diana, who was becoming an embarrassment. There's no doubt that Diana, by many of her interviews and actions, did embarrass the royal family, whose popularity, you remember, in the decade before Diana's death had been plummeting. Only 50% of people that year before Diana's death in Britain said that they valued the royal family. They were in that unpopular place, partly because of Charles's actions at that stage, or his perceived actions by the public. So was there a dark hand? I suppose we never really know. An inquiry was held, and they ruled out any conspiracy to take out the Princess of Wales, you know. But it's one of these things you and I will live to see, you know. Alternative history, I suppose we would call it today, possibly fake news around this event. We'll never know, but the French held an inquiry, and they drew a blank. And, of course, while the driver of the car survived, he was scarred by life by his injuries. So we never will really. There's no one speaking from that tragic event in the Paris underpass.
Eamon, thank you very much indeed. Historian Dr. Eamon Phoenix on the life of Princess Diana. Princess Diana, who died in that traffic collision 20 years ago today. 20 years ago today. Your memories, very welcome indeed. You can let us know. 90 333 105.